The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Okay, here's an interesting text message which sums up many that have come in. It says, I'm in my 40s and I'm fully vaccinated, as is my wife and my children over 12. So I'm as far from an anti-vaxxer as you can get. However, talk of a latest extension of the lockdown by the government is completely unwarranted. Are we really to believe 300,000 people are the cause of all of these numbers? We have a 92% vaccination rate, the highest in Europe, and yet the COVID numbers are climbing. What are we not being told? Okay, Professor Liam Fanning, Professor of Immunovirology at UCC. A lot of people are confused. If we have the best vaccination performance in the European Union, why do we have one of the highest levels of COVID, increasing numbers going into hospital, more going into ICU?
Okay, so good afternoon, good evening, Matt. So I suppose just based on the numbers, there's a couple of things. Those numbers are based on PCR positives, right? Okay, and so the rest of Europe is really using antigen testing to assess whether people have an amount of COVID that's likely to lead to transmission as opposed to just been infected or in the past been infected with COVID. Because as you're more than aware, you know, the PCR can actually detect COVID-19 for quite an amount of time after the transmissive, the infectious period. It'll also pick it up in the early part of the infection. So that's one aspect of it. The other is that,
Can I just clarify that? So does that mean that perhaps the numbers in the rest of the EU are lower than they would be if they were using our measurement methods?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this differential between, you know, antigen testing doesn't ask the same question as PCR testing. PCR testing asks, is the presence of the virus detectable? It doesn't make any, the result that we are given doesn't give any assessment as to whether the patient was infectious or not. That data is there. And we have a measure called the CT value. And if it's less than 25, the individual is likely to be infectious at the time the sample was taken. If it was above that, it's not likely that they were infectious, that could transmit the virus after that. So that differential is not being given. So when your texter asks, you know, what are we not being told? Part of the PCR data that we're not being given is that proportion of the PCR data, which is 25 or less. In other words, from an individual who was infected and likely to be, you know, to transmit it or could transmit it at that particular time, as opposed to somebody who had a CT value higher than that. And not likely to be at a point of their infection where they could transmit the infection. So that's one aspect of it. The antigen testing is the other. 300,000 people is still about 8% of the population, but they're probably seeding it into other vaccinated individuals. So when it's high in the unvaccinated population, we're going to get a higher rate of breakthrough, or what's called breakthrough infections, in those that are vaccinated. And that's leading then to we'll say larger numbers per day, which is leading to some numbers in ICU. But the numbers in ICU are such, Matt, that nearly two-thirds of them are actually unvaccinated. So if you take it as approximately 70, 75 in and around an ICU, that's 25 individuals who are vaccinated who are ending up in hospital. The rest of them are not. If we only had 25 in ICU, we wouldn't really be talking about this as a news item. We would say this is very manageable within the context of what we have in an overworked hospital system.
Okay, so just to clarify that, the problem is the 300,000 people who are not vaccinated.
I see it as largely, so this is largely an infection that is going to be maintained in the population by unvaccinated individuals. They're then seeding it into the vaccinated population, and that's where the breakthrough infections are coming from largely, because there are two things that we can be certain of. You're more likely to pick up this infection if you're unvaccinated, and you're more likely to transmit it to another if you're unvaccinated. If you're vaccinated, both of those events, you're less likely to pick it up. And if you do pick it up, you're less likely to transmit it. And you're also very much protected from ending up in hospital. So this is largely an infection of those individuals who have, at this stage, probably chosen not to get vaccinated.
But there are people who are vaccinated, who get it and who could potentially spread it. And I say this as somebody who's doubly vaccinated, who had COVID in early September.
That is true. That is true. Absolutely. That is true.
What about the under-12s? Because this is now becoming an issue that a lot of people are wondering, has this been spread because of kids in primary school bringing it home?
There's a possibility that kids could spread it. But what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, Matt, is Pfizer are going to get approval by the FDA to emergency approval for the vaccination of 5 to 11-year-olds. And then NIAC here will be faced with a decision when the EMA may approve it to allow vaccination for the 5 to 11-year-olds. And that will then squeeze this viral infection into an ever smaller population of unvaccinated individuals. So I think, you know, that's a population that's look, they cannot be vaccinated. They're not the ones that we can do something about. The adults, the 300,000 who are not vaccinated, we can. You know, to some level, the vaccine cert that we have had all got used to is a way of socially excluding individuals. And there is an argument, I think, for continuing that.
Yeah, but what about, I mean, a lot of people are furious at the idea that the remaining restrictions won't be unwound on the 22nd of October. Do you think they should be unwound or not?
I do think they should be unwound, but I think there should be a degree of kind of, you know, social exclusion from those individuals who are not vaccinated. I mean, we can't hand over a situation where you have a first kind of control given to 300,000 individuals for the rest of the population. I mean, you know, we just can't tolerate that situation. So those individuals, we really need to take the France model or the French model, where, you know, if you're not vaccinated, you know, you're really persona non grata at nearly everything in France, apart from buying food and going to the medical care system.
Can I give you a concrete example? So would that suggest that we should allow maybe full stadiums for sports events, say like the soccer match against Portugal, the rugby against New Zealand in November, but say that if it's going to be a full stadium, that it should be restricted to those who can prove they've been vaccinated?
Yes.
I'm sure lots of people who are unvaccinated would regard that as an infringement on their civil liberties.
But they're actually infringing on everybody else's civil liberties potentially by being a source for actually picking up this infection. And it's not just about picking up the infection. If they pick up the infection and pass it on to someone else and that person ends up in hospital, that is actually taking up a hospital place that is keeping somebody else out from maybe needing some, we'll say, either their chemotherapy or they're ill because they have a chest infection and they need to come into hospital. This is not just about COVID. The disproportionate effect of individuals who are unvaccinated on the healthcare system is impacting on everybody else's ability to access health care. So it's not a kind of a monodimensional, I'm unvaccinated, I'm not impacting on anybody else's care. They are.
The pubs and restaurants are open. People have to show their vaccine passports. That was supposed to be gone from the 22nd of October. Would you let free-for-all in the pubs and restaurants beyond 11:30 at night return to clubbing and all those type of activities?
Look, we have the highest vaccination rate in Europe, and with a bit of support from probably antigen testing, I see absolutely no reason why we can't. You know what I mean? We have a dividend of over 92% of the adult population in this country vaccinated. The worry, I presume, from NPHET and those taking care of that aspect of things is the hospital capacity more so than actually the numbers that are infected, because, you know, we have such a limited buffer of spare capacity within our hospital system, the public hospital system. We could do what we did during the first surge, is co-opt the private hospitals if we really end up in trouble. You know, this is down to getting the last bit of those individuals who are not being vaccinated now currently to have been vaccinated, and the parents and guardians of the 12 to 15-year-olds who are not vaccinated, you know, they need to be able to access proper information as to why this is of value for their children or the people that they're responsible for as guardians, and why it protects others as well as
okay.
themselves.
Professor Liam Fanning, stay on the line, please. I want to come back to you in a moment, but I want to talk now to Sunil Sharp, who's a DJ and campaigner with Give Us Tonight. How worried are you that the anticipated return to normality on the 22nd of October may be deferred again?
Yeah, I'm very, very concerned, Matt. We've kind of seen this coming. I was very sceptical, and we were very sceptical within the industry at the end of August when the government made their last announcement. I mean, it promised a full lifting of restrictions, which really seemed at odds with their extremely restrictive regulations so far throughout COVID. So it seemed a little out of character. I didn't really buy it, to be honest. It was very short in detail. But we do like to be positive, and we do like to hope for the best. But now, as we're getting closer to that reopening date, I've got to say I'm not surprised by this, but it's definitely raised anxiety levels to an all-time peak now.
Would you have any difficulties? It would say that, yes, you could have all venues open, but it would only be for those who could actually show a vaccine passport on the way in.
I don't think that's the answer. For us, it's about controlling the spread of COVID-19. So it comes back to testing. So that's a big one for us. And this seems to be an area that the government want to bypass. It appears like there's been a report that has been completed that is sitting on someone's desk in relation to antigen testing, but still hasn't been published. And we'd like to know why that hasn't been published and why the government are not getting behind lateral flow testing. I know that it's not as accurate as PCR tests, but not about COVID-19, and we have to do what we can to try to prevent the spread of it. And neighbouring states and other countries around us are using antigen testing and are actually supplying lateral flow tests for free to the public. Why are we not doing that here in Ireland to enable a safe reopening of the industry?
Okay, so Neil Sharp, thank you for joining us. Professor Liam Fanning, one listener points out you said don't allow unvaccinated people into the Aviva Stadium. That would mean the hat-trick hero for the Irish football team the other night, Callum Robinson, wouldn't be able to play against Portugal because he famously is not vaccinated.
But as I understand it, Matt, he's been infected twice. Is that correct?
Yes.
As well? So he probably has a very large degree of immunity to subsequent infection. So he's not really the same as an unvaccinated individual.
Okay, the other thing that came up today was Professor Philip Nolan comparing people who go to their workplace while they have a cold or other potential symptoms to being like drunk drivers getting into a car. Is that a fair analogy?
I suppose Professor Nolan has given us some classics over the pandemic. It is probably, I think it's a bit harsh because, I mean, you know, okay, people do die when they get infected, you know, but the dynamic between drunk driving and actually picking up COVID as a result of a co-worker coming out completely different. I think it's probably an unfortunately analogy, you know, especially given respect to all those individuals who have been injured or otherwise as a result of drunk driving. I think it's kind of unfortunate.
Okay, but there's also an issue that, you know, many people can't afford to take more time off work if they're sick. Or if they're feeling a little bit off. And I'm sure many employers might be suspicious as well of some employees who might ring in saying they're feeling unwell and suspect that it's in reality only a duvet day.
That's a very tricky one, actually. And I like you're depending on people's, you know, truthfulness to kind of that. That's a very tricky one, Matt. But if people have cold-like symptoms that are concomitant with COVID-19, you know, then, you know, they are advised to get a PCR test. But look, there's a very effective flu vaccine as well. So I would encourage people to get the flu vaccine as well as getting the COVID vaccine. And that way they have the best protection. And then they're more than likely to kind of be able to go to work symptom free.
As it happens, I got the flu vaccine myself this morning. OK,
excellent.
Thank you, Professor Liam Fanning, Professor of Immunovirology at UCC. Thank you for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.